Hello and welcome to Because of Horses, the online radio program for horse lovers. Each week, fascinating conversations with notable guests from around the world discussing horses and the challenges and triumphs of living the equestrian life. Ready to talk horses? Here's your host, Elise Gaston-Shand.
Hi, this is Elise, and you're listening to Because of Horses, the official podcast of the Hampton Classic. Now, humans love horses. We all know this. And just one expression of this passion is to breed horses for particular jobs, a skill that has historically been based upon horsemanship, knowledge of bloodlines, and a significant amount of instinct. We also know that each foal brings with it a genetic legacy with the potential for qualities that can make one a talented jumper or a superb cattle horse or a blazing fast racehorse. My guest today is Dr. Emmeline Hill, the Chief Science Officer at Plus Vital. She is renowned for identifying the speed gene in thoroughbred racehorses, and she's joining me from Ireland. Now, Dr. Hill's scientific breakthrough means that thoroughbred breeders have something more than instinct to rely on. That's because her discovery can predict a horse's optimal race distance by examining its DNA to determine whether it possesses genes that are more suited to sprints, to middle distance, or to longer races. So, Dr. Hill, what is this gene, and how does it correlate to performance in racehorses?
Hi, Lisa. Lovely to be on your podcast.
Thanks.
About 10 years ago, we identified that a gene called myostatin could be used to predict the best racing distance for a thoroughbred racehorse. Myostatin had previously been shown, mutations in the myostatin gene had previously been shown to be associated with unusual muscle characteristics in a range of other species, in cattle, sheep, pigs, mice, and even in humans. And when we started looking at this gene, it was before the era where we could look at the entire genome for horse. So we had to pick off certain genes that we hypothesized might be contributing to performance. And because of the known effects of myostatin mutations in these other species, that's why we started looking at this gene. And that's the gene that we now call in thoroughbreds the speed gene.
Right. And just one of the outcomes of your study is that some of the horses studied were actually quite fast and had the potential to win, but it turned out that they were being entered in races with distances that just didn't suit their genetic makeup. So this new information could be used by trainers and owners to determine where to race their horses for the best shot at winning for that particular individual. But how have your study findings matched up with actual performance on the track so far?
Yeah, well, if we go back to our original study, what we did was that we had a relatively large cohort of horses that had won at the very top level, so group race level. So these are Derbies or, at the highest level. But of course, in thoroughbred racing, those top level races are not all at the same distances. So there are sprint races and there are longer distance races. And horses, just like humans, are not suited to the range of distances. So, you know, you have sprint athletes and marathon runners, and if you pitch them against one another, while they may be the best in the world in their own discipline, wouldn't be a match for any other discipline. So it's the same in horse racing. So what we did was, with our set of group race winners, we separated them into horses that had won their best race over sprint race distances and horses that had won their best race over longer distances. And we found that a genetic marker or a mutation, and we now know that there's a specific mutation there in the myostatin gene, was more frequent or more common in the sprinters than it was in the longer distance horses. So that was our initial study cohort, where we already knew their race distances. And we have subsequently gone on to look in thousands of horses that have raced in all of the major race regions of the world. That's in Europe and Australia and South Africa and Japan and in North America. And in these thousands of horses, we see consistently the same pattern, that horses that have this mutation in the myostatin gene are better at sprint race distances than in longer race distances. What we found, though, and this is very interesting, is that while for centuries, people have used pedigree to try to assess the best race distance for a horse. They look at the pedigree and they assess the dam line, or they assess the sire line, and they make a best guess on the basis of what may have been inherited from those ancestors as to what that individual has inherited. And so based on pedigree and based on the confirmation type of a horse, a trainer will take yearlings into his or her yard, and they'll assess the confirmation characteristics of a horse, and they look quite different. Sprinters generally tend to be shorter, stockier, more muscular types than the more endurance type horses that tend to be taller, leaner, and take a little bit longer to mature as well. So based on pedigree assessment and based on confirmation assessment, and perhaps knowing siblings that they might have trained before or parents that they may have trained before, a trainer will train a horse and place it in the distance, that the race distances that he or she thinks suit that horse. But what we found in our analysis is that when we look at the different genetic types based on the speed gene, trainers are not always placing their horses in the races that they are best suited to. And this has a considerable economic consequence on the earnings of a horse. So horses that have this mutation in the speed gene that is favorable for sprinting earn more in short distance sprint races. And horses that don't have the mutation doesn't mean that they're no good at racing. It means that they're better placed and will earn more money in longer distance races. But our analysis now of thousands of horses shows that in a very large number of cases, over 55% of the horses that we have looked at, horses that have this mutation that are suited for sprint racing are not actually tried at these distances as three-year-old racehorses. So the trainers are missing a major opportunity for earning prize money by not using the information in this way.
Well, and you know, there's an extension of that just occurred to me, and that is, you know, so many off-the-track thoroughbreds are off the track because they weren't winning. And so maybe they were actually quite fast, but they just were not being placed in races with distances that were appropriate to their potential, right?
Exactly, and that's exactly it. So this is not an assessment of whether a horse is a good or a bad horse, or whether it's likely to win or not. It enables better management of the horse to maximize the genetic potential of that individual. So they may appear to be no good on the race course, or but it may be that they're not being placed in the discipline where they have the greatest chance of earning prize money.
And that's huge, not just from the perspective of the financial side, which of course is significant. I mean, we're talking a business, and the numbers have to match up or you don't stay in business. But from the potential outcome for thousands, tens of thousands of horses that otherwise might be considered unsatisfactory, unsuitable for racing.
Absolutely. And the other thing is that a lot of horses may retire to breeding, particularly mares, that may not have performed optimally on the racetrack, but will retire to broodmare band and will be used then for breeding. And in that situation, the breeder may not have a very good sense of that mare's distance aptitude. So the breeding decisions then at that point are going to be much more difficult for the breeder. So using the genetic information, now we have breeders that are using the genetic information could best select stallions that will suit a mare, and particularly for those mares that may not have raced or may not have raced long enough to have a good sense of where they're best placed. So you can use the information to inform breeding decisions to more consistently produce the type of foal that you want. So some people want fast sprint horses that will be those horses tend to be early maturing, more precocious types and perform well as two-year-olds. And many people want that type of horse. They also sell better in the yearling sales because they tend to muscle up more quickly. The myostatin gene has an effect on the on the rate of muscle growth. So we've done a number of studies in North American sales and in Australian sales where the horses that have the speed gene type tend to earn more money in the sales ring. So some people want to produce that type of horse, but others want to produce horses that will stay more distance. And you'll often hear in, you know, at around this time of year, in fact, where people are considering whether they will put their horses over longer distance races, whether that horse will stay the trip or not. And some people want those longer distance horses because they tend to actually be more valuable in terms of prize money and prestige. So in breeding a mare, having that information to hand allows you to more precisely achieve the goals that you're setting out to meet in your breeding breeding strategy for that mare, and then also for your overall broodmare band.
So you've heard me say it before, I am the horse-crazy daughter of a non-equestrian family. I know there are a lot of us out there. And growing up, if there was a mistake that we and my family could make around horses, well, let's just say I had a battalion of guardian angels working overtime. I was so fortunate to find Pony Club. And many others I know have found 4-H or terrific lesson barns to help them. But for all of those who just aren't really sure where to begin, well, it occurred to me that parents and grandparents who aren't horse people could really benefit from an insider's guide to safely learn how to ride and to just be around horses. This idea turned into one of my books, A Parent's Guide to Riding Lessons. Despite the title, it's also a great guide for adults who'd like to take up riding or return to it. And for any instructors out there, well, it sings your praises, and it helps students to be the partners that you would love for them to be. Endorsed by the United States Pony Club, A Parent's Guide to Riding Lessons includes tons of information on how to find a great barn, translations of all the crazy horse speak you'll hear among equestrians, how to keep your young rider or yourself as safe as possible, plus how to save a ton of money in what can be a pretty expensive sport. A Parent's Guide to Riding Lessons is available where all fine books are sold, including Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and your local bookseller. There's also a link on my website, www.becauseofhorses.com. Now let's return to my guest, Dr. Hill. That's all a part of the art and the science of breeding. So some horses can have respectable racing careers and then go to the breeding shed and produce offspring with phenomenal racing careers. And other racehorses have outstanding performance on the track, but their offspring never match the parents' records. So have your studies extended through the generations at this stage to determine the degree to which parents pass on that speed gene to their offspring, or is it still kind of early?
No, well, the speed gene is it's a single gene, so we can very accurately predict what will be passed on. So if a mare has two copies of the mutation, she will always pass one copy on to her progeny. And same with the stallion. If they don't have a copy of the mutation, then they will never pass it on. And it's very simple Mendelian inheritance that we can predict the outcomes from a mating for that gene. But when we're talking about overall performance and aptitude and ability of a horse, that actually comes from genes across the entire genome. And that's much more complicated and much more difficult to predict because you have a whole suite of combinations of, there are over 20,000 genes in the horse genome, and a very large proportion of those will contribute to the various different anatomical, metabolic, and physiological attributes that are all required together to make an elite racehorse. So we're not talking about a single gene in that case. So that's where it really comes down to a genetic lottery. So at every conception, the combination of those genes that are in the egg or in the sperm of the stallion, what comes together really is chance, random chance. And that's much more difficult to predict. So that in a case where you may have a champion race mare and an elite stallion, stallions tend to be champions anyway by the nature of the selection process in the industry. And you may produce a foal that is not an optimal racehorse. Could be because it's inherited just by random chance, the less favorable genetic variants from both of those parents. Whereas then you may have a full sibling that inherits the optimal combination of those genes and could be a champion racehorse. And that's where you see so much variation, even within siblings, even with progeny of a single stallion or progeny of a single mare. They can be very, very different. And that's no different, really, if you look at, the best example, I suppose, is in our own human families. You look at your own children, and they're very different, and that's because they've inherited different parts of you and different parts of your partner. And it's exactly the same with horses. So the speed gene is just one part of a very complicated puzzle. But it is one part of the puzzle that we have very clearly unraveled, and we can define very, very accurately. The other parts of the puzzle, we have actually developed a number of different prediction algorithms that allows us to predict elite performance based on this combination of genetic markers. We can't yet predict what will happen if a mare goes to a particular stallion, but we can predict it from the genetics of a horse itself, and assess what genes have been passed down from its parents. And that allows us then to make an assessment on the basis just of the genetics of the chance of a horse going on to have an elite racing career. Now, the thing about that is that genetics is only part of the puzzle. We know that there is a genetic contribution to athletic performance, but the environmental factors play as big, if not an even bigger role than genetics. So where a horse is, how a young foal is managed, the environment that it's managed in, the nutrition, the training yard that it goes to, the opportunity that it is given, all of those things play an equal, if not greater, role. And that's where the horsemanship comes in. So I think you touched on it earlier, that genetics will never replace the skill of the horseman. There's no way that it ever will. It's not a magic bullet, because it plays a part, but it's not the whole.
Well, and how incredibly beneficial to just have that additional piece of the puzzle that factors into all of the other elements that you were talking about, including just the ability to get a horse to the starting gates, without trauma, without injury, with all of the millions of moving pieces coming together in just the right way for that horse to get its first start. But one of the things I found myself wondering, is the gene found only in blood, or is it possible to isolate it in tissue or in hair? Because I would be very curious if we could test some of racing's greats who are no longer with us, thinking Secretariat or Farlap, just wondering if there's a way to kind of map out what their genetics looked like.
Yeah, so the same genetic makeup is found in every cell, except for the gametes, the egg and the sperm cells. But in all cells in the body of the horse, and there are about billions of them in the horse, they will have the same genetic package in the form of the 32 pairs of chromosomes from the horse. So you could take a hair sample, you could take a blood sample, you could take a sample of DNA from a tooth or a bone, and assess the genetics of an individual. And in fact, we did this a few years ago. where we collaborated with a research team in Cambridge, and we took samples from skeletal remains of some of the most famous historic horses in the stud book, including Eclipse, who's one of the greatest racehorses of all time, and we assessed their speed gene. And what we found was that none of them males, so they were all stallions, because of course the stallion skeletal remains are kept in museums. And,
how about that?
not very many of the mares. The stallions did not have this mutation.
Huh.
So we actually did a further analysis where we suggested that it's likely that this mutation came from one of the founding mares in the population. And then it proliferated in the population through a prominent stallion later on in time. Because, of course, if you think back hundreds of years ago when racing first started, they were racing over much, much longer distances. So there were four-mile heats where horses were competing over four-mile distances. And then later on in the day, being challenged to another race. So they have to have extraordinary stamina. So the speed gene wouldn't have been beneficial to them at that point. But as racing evolved and it became more exciting to have short distance sprint races, that's when the opportunity for this mutation to become much more prevalent and prominent in the population. So it is possible, to answer your question, it is possible to go back to historic tissue samples and evaluate the genetics. It's not as straightforward by any manner of means as doing a DNA analysis on a current tissue sample. And there are all sorts of precautions and controls and so on that have to be put in place to avoid contamination, etc. But it is certainly possible.
Considering the pounding our horses' legs and hooves take day to day, it is such a relief to know that we can help to keep them sound by making sure the arena surfaces that we work them on are designed and built with equine wellness top of mind. Now, whether you're building a brand new arena or you need to do some work on an existing one, GGT Footing can help you to build the best and safest arena, no matter your discipline. To learn more, go to ggtfooting.com/BOHP. There's a general consensus, and you were talking a little bit about that from the perspective of how racing has changed over a couple hundred years. But there's a general consensus that racehorses may actually have slowed down. So I was reading a study recently that when you look at 10-year averages of winning race times for top-class races of varying lengths, the winning times have dropped, which means that the horses were running faster, and they dropped from the mid-19th century to about 1990, where, at least in the U.S., they stalled, with rare exceptions like Secretariat or, more recently, Justify. Now, racing experts have said that they think the initial time decrease, so again, faster horses, was likely due to improvements in track conditions, better breeding, or advances in training for that matter. But it got me thinking, just how fast can we expect a thoroughbred to be? I mean, is there an evolutionary or anatomical speed ceiling?
Well, I'm a geneticist, so I'm not sure that I can answer that question. But from a genetics perspective, you know, there's always going to be a limitation of the frequency of the alleles. You can't get more mutations unless they're in the population. So breeders have to date, very, very successfully and methodically selected the best genetics at each subsequent generation. So while the top end may not get faster, what genetics can do can enable the bottom end of the curve, I suppose the slower end of the curve, to come up towards the average or above average. And that really is, I suppose, the point of utilizing genetics to improve the the lower end of the population. One thing that is a consideration, you mentioned it earlier on, is actually a horse having a race course start. So if you look at sort of that end of the population, a horse may not have a race course start for a very large number of reasons, whether it's due to injury or inherited performance limiting disease, of which there are quite a number in the thoroughbred, or unsuitable behavioural aspects. We have just published a paper, which actually just this week, that shows that genes that are contributing to behavioural attributes may be as important as physiological characteristics in the chance of a horse having a race course start or making it to the race, the starting gates. I think it's estimated that somewhere between 40 and 50% of race horses or thoroughbreds that are born don't actually have an opportunity to start in a race as a and as 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds, where that's the most economically important time frame, we have found that there's a gene, it's called the PRCP gene, which has been shown in mice to be associated with the motivation to exercise. So this gene is the same gene that we find in thoroughbreds that have a greater chance of having a race course start as a 2-year-old or 3-year-old. In mice, it's fascinating. There studies have been done where they have sets of mice that will voluntarily jump on their little wheel and exercise for hours and hours on end, and then other mice with different genetics that prefer not to do that. And so in the horse, we see the same gene at higher frequency in horses that have race course start as a 2-year-old or 3-year-old. And we think that this is to do with the motivation to exercise. And everybody will recognize the horse that has, a better attitude towards its work compared to a horse that doesn't. You know, they'll be anticipating the sound of the bridles in the morning, and they'll be almost banging the stable door down to want to get out and exercise. And then there'll be others that may be not so interested and may be perceived as not having the right attitude to their work. So whether this has an effect in the training environment, that could be the case, but it could also be the case that horses that are more naturally motivated to exercise by themselves as foals get more exercise naturally, and this could have long-lasting impacts later on in life, because the more exercise they do as young foals, there's an impact on strengthening of bones and so on, and this could have favorable effects on them later on in life.
That's fascinating. My thoughts have gone off in a million different directions on that, and I'll be so curious to learn more. But I was laughing because I thought, okay, I kind of am in touch with that one mouse that doesn't really like to run on the wheel, because while I enjoy being active, I hate running. So if I'm ever running, it's because something with teeth is chasing me. So... But, you know, when you really think about it, the irony in even founding a breed creates something of a genetic bottleneck, right? Since we're selectively breeding for specific characteristics, which obviously has the outcome of reducing genetic diversity. And then over time, in a closed breed book like the thoroughbreds, we enhance that limited diversity by breeding champion to champion or champion lines to champion lines. So where at one point we had outside genes, outside blood coming into the book, we no longer do. And you were touching earlier upon some of the negative components that exist in any genetic pool. You know, so we breed for the positive characteristics, but those negative characteristics are still right there in the population. So how do we address issues like that in a limited gene pool, whether it's thoroughbreds or any other breed that has a closed breed book?
Well, in the Thoroughbred, there's quite a significant amount of work going on internationally among the equine genomics research groups, looking at trying to identify genes that are contributing to performance-limiting disease in the Thoroughbred, inherited disease. And that includes things like bleeding, wind problems, lower airway disease, muscle disease like tying up and so on. All of these are well-established inherited diseases, but they're complex traits. It's unlikely that they're influenced by major single genes. It's maybe multiple genes or maybe different genes in different families. And that's probably why they haven't yet been identified, though everybody's working very hard towards that end, which would enable, once we get to that point, would enable breeders to inform their stallion choices for their mares to reduce the chance or the risk of a foal having these diseases. But I think to go back to your, I suppose, the key point that you're making is that in all animal populations, in artificially managed populations or in populations of animals that are under threat in terms of having small population numbers, reduction of genetic diversity can result in inbreeding depression, which is an accumulation of deleterious mutations in the genome. Or in the gene pool, I should say. So where you have inbreeding or the use of popular sires is perceived to be beneficial because you're trying to duplicate or double up on the advantageous genes, this could have the detrimental effect of bringing along with it these disadvantageous or deleterious gene variants in the population. And that should be a concern of the industry, and it should be addressed by the industry. This is Dr. Emmeline Hill, I'm Chief Science Officer for Plus Vital, and you're listening to Because of Horses.
Anybody can do the math or can at least intuit the math that at some point in time in the future, however distant, you could conceivably get to a point where you've got some real problems related to an increasingly extensively limited gene pool. So being aware of that today, thinking in terms of that and trying to mitigate to the greatest degree possible is only logical for the well-being of the breed, whether it's a thoroughbred or it's another horse breed or, you know, dog breeds or cat breeds for that matter, anything that we manage.
Absolutely, because all populations need, not only, you know, is it that the limiting the gene pool have an effect on increasing the chance of these risk or disease genes, but also it limits the opportunity for adaptation to changes in environment or circumstances, and that's the that's the nature of genetic diversity, or the reason that populations need genetic diversity is to be able to adapt when circumstances change.
Absolutely. Now, I read something fascinating that your findings also had the potential for applications in human medicine, particularly related to genetic components for disease, maybe obesity, type 2 diabetes. How is that so?
So the research that we've been doing, we've been looking at the genes that are involved in muscle function in the horse. So this is my university-based research in University College Dublin. And over the last number of years, we've been collecting muscle biopsy samples from a large number, hundreds of horses, and assessing the activity of genes in the muscle in response to exercise. And what we find overwhelmingly in these sets of genes is that they're genes that are known to be involved in insulin metabolism or in protection of muscle structure and so on. So a range of different traits. But because the thoroughbred has been so beautifully selected for athletic traits, it is it's a natural model for the advantageous, or the extreme example of what a healthy type of a muscle system should look like. So understanding that enables us to understand how these genes interact and how they're talking to one another, I suppose, and which genes are most important in those systems. So that could inform in other systems or in other species, because there's so much sharing across evolutionary time, how the genes interact in the muscle of the horse could inform on how these genes interact and signal in other systems. So we, in a lot of scientific studies, and rather than doing experiments on humans or looking and relying on taking muscle biopsies from humans, often studies are done in mice, and mice are bred in particular ways to try to replicate a particular phenotype or characteristic that researchers want to look at, but they're not a natural model for as athletes, whereas the thoroughbred, we believe, represents a natural large animal model that could be useful in that sort of research.
Yeah, well, I have to tell you, there is one human study that I would be all in for 100%, and that's figuring out a way to identify the horse-loving gene, particularly for those of us who were born into non-horse families where it's utterly inexplicable. What do you think? Is that a possibility someday?
I definitely think that it's in the blood. Once you have it, it's very hard to get away from, but it's probably easier to acquire than to get rid of.
Hey, listeners, my guest on next week's episode is the wildly talented young rider, Kelly Cruciati, whose life is the epitome of all that can be accomplished when you follow your dreams. Her illustrious junior equitation career included medaling on the Young Rider Nations Cup team, winning the Artisan Farms Under 25 Series in Wellington, and capturing the blue ribbon in the Encana $50,000 Under 25 Grand Prix at Spruce Meadows, and culminated by winning the USEF Pessoa Medal Finals. Now she's set her sights on the Olympics, and boy, world, just wait. But while her accomplishments and her dreams are vast, Kelly maintains a down-to-earth attitude and relentless dedication to self-improvement. Training under the watchful eye of her mom, Cindy, godmother, Kelly Clevenger, and gold medalist, Peter Wild, Kelly keeps busy by working hard at her family's facility, Serenity Farm, where she doubles as associate trainer and resident Grand Prix rider, and traveling the country for competition. This fun and inspirational episode airs on Friday, July 26th, 2019. Now let's return to this week's guest, Dr. Hill. Like so many of us, I've read you were a true horse girl from your youngest days, and you've got legendary equestrian roots as well. Your grandmother, I loved reading about her. She was the first woman to ride against men in Ireland. They called her the Galloping Granny in your family's hometown in County Wexford. And she also bred horses and even owned the prize-winning thoroughbred mare Don Run. But although you were quite a rider yourself, it was really horse breeding that always captivated you. And I was curious, why was that, do you think, especially with the riding background that you had?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. You know, I rode ponies as a child, and I was surrounded by my father and my grandmother who were breeding horses. And really, my first taste of the thoroughbred industry was when I was a university student, and I spent a summer riding for a trainer on the Curra, for John Ox on the Curra. And I spent 3 months there riding racehorses every morning. And I absolutely got the bug. I loved it.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated by the just knowing the horses and then being able to, watching the races and understanding who's who and how, how the whole behind the scenes operated. And that really got me interested in figuring out how I could apply the science that I was learning to something that might be useful in the industry. So I still ride a little bit now. My kids are very involved with my children, who are both keen on the ponies. But breeding and racing really became fascinating to me after I had a taste for it as a university student.
Oh, and what a wonderful experience, too. But, you know, there was no such thing as equine genetics, really, when you started grad school. So instead, you studied human population genetics at Trinity College Dublin. And you figured correctly, as it turned out, that you could use the training in human population genetics and apply it to horses. But what do you recall about that time in your life? I mean, what did your colleagues think about the horse application?
Well, I remember when I was an undergraduate student, before I started my PhD program, and I wanted to take a module in reproductive physiology because I was thinking about breeding and so on. And I was doing a general science degree and genetics degree, but that module clashed with a module on enzyme kinetics, which all genetics students had to take. So it took my greatest powers of persuasion to persuade my tutor to allow me to take the reproductive physiology module. And when I told him why I wanted to do it, there was a little bit of frowning and curiosity as to how that actually would work. But I always had it in my mind that this is something that you could apply the knowledge of genetics to breeding racehorses. And I was very fortunate to be in the same department as Professor Paddy Cunningham, who was one of the first research to look at thoroughbred genetics. So even though I did my PhD in human population genetics, I always had my eye out for what Paddy Cunningham was working on. And I did have an opportunity then to work on a small project looking at mitochondrial DNA inheritance in thoroughbred female families. But like you said, there was the science of equine genetics at that point was in its infancy. There was no sign of a horse genome sequence being generated even at that point. But I still had at the back of my mind, if I train in the skills and the technologies, and then one day I may be able to apply it. It was the genome era. The human genome was being sequenced at that point for squillions of dollars and a you know, huge amount of effort. So it was beyond our comprehension that there would be a horse genome in my career lifetime, let alone my actual lifetime. but then it happened. And, you know, the technologies have got cheaper and faster. And so much so that, a whole genome can be sequenced within a matter of hours for a relatively small cost, you know, $1,000 now, compared to the billions of dollars that was invested in the human genome 20 or so years ago. So I was growing up in this era of the human genome sequence revolution, and that was sort of set my mind thinking and how I could apply it. I got slightly closer to horses after my PhD when I took up a research in cattle. So I was getting closer all the time. And when I was doing my research in cattle, an opportunity arose for me to apply to a funding grant for young researchers who had never had their own research group before. So I applied for that with this harebrained idea that you could apply the genetics that I'd learned in human and cattle genetics and apply it to the horse. And luckily, the funding agency backed it. And that's when I started this research, which is 15 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. And the rest is history. So how can listeners learn more about your study and subsequent work?
Well, we have my company is called Plus Vital, where we offer our genetic tests, a range of genetic tests. And on our website, which is plusvital.com, there will be there's a lot of information about our genetic tests and information about the scientific research papers that we have published.
Wonderful. And that information will also be included in the show notes for this episode. Well, Dr. Hill, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a truly fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap. Dr. Emmeline Hill's scientific breakthrough in identifying the speed gene can predict a horse's optimal race distance by examining its DNA to determine whether it possesses genes that are more suited to sprints, to middle distance, or to longer races. Now, this has the potential to not only help breeders predict the best stallion and mare matches, trainers to identify the best distance for their horses to train and to run, but it can also help the horses themselves by giving them the best shot to perform well, potentially extending their racing careers and limiting the number who are kicked off the track for being too slow when maybe all they needed was to run a shorter or a longer race. I'm Elise Gaston-Chand, and this podcast is Because of Horses.
Thanks for downloading this week's edition of Because of Horses. You can listen to more episodes on Apple, Google Play, Android, or on www.becauseofhorses.com.